And good morning and welcome to Kitchen Table Talk. This is John Lendorf, and this is our monthly show devoted to food and agriculture and everything edible and local. I'm thrilled to be back in the KGNU studio in Boulder. And my wonderful co-host, Daniel Asher, is joining us from far away. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. How are you, John? It's great to have you back in the studio. Amazing.
Yeah. And so where are you?
I'm just taking a little break with the family. We're on a little adventure, and we're going to be back on Sunday. I'm just wandering around.
I'm glad you took a break.
And thank you. Yes.
And would you like to introduce our guests this morning?
Yes, I would. I would love to. We've got Jody and Katie are joining us, representing the Boulder chapter of Slow Food, an incredible organization that has very deep, beautiful roots, originally from Europe, from Italy, and the principles are very much based on elements of connecting with the slow, meticulous, beautiful process of everything that goes into food, the complete opposite of what we would now call fast food or the dollar value menu express experience. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're great.
Yeah, doing well.
Thank you for inviting us.
And
thanks for coming in.
I wanted to mention that, Dan is right, that the slow food movement started in Italy after McDonald's announced that they were going to open a McDonald's in Milan, in the famous square.
Yes, that's right.
The interesting thing is that shortly after that, a local food celebrity, Peggy Markell, who leads tours, had heard about slow food. And I attended a meeting long ago in Niwot, I believe, that was kind of the first discussion of, well, shouldn't we have something like slow food in America? And I'm thrilled that the slow food chapter is alive and well in Boulder County. Explain what slow food is doing locally.
Okay, sure. I'll kick it off and I'll hand it over to Katie. Yes, Peggy and also Laura Bloom and all of that, those gals who started the slow food movement, I think it was in 1997 here in Boulder. We have to give them a lot of credit for the work that they've done. And then it went to sleep for a little while. Mm-hmm. And around 2017, when Slow Food Nations came back to Denver, because Slow Food Denver has such a huge reach and they have breadth and depth within the community, we decided to reinvigorate the Boulder chapter again, and we created Slow Food Boulder County because that's where the farms are.
Right.
And so we've been really working hard to understand and work with those farms, work with the chefs and the producers to try and connect everybody in an accessible way as well.
Mm-hmm. I'll just add that as kind of an extension, I mean, the organization itself is kind of set up with a national, well, internationally national office, and then we all have kind of local chapters that do work in the community in order to customize the work that we do to the communities.
So what do you do specifically in Boulder County?
Great question. So a lot of the work that we've been doing, particularly kind of post-COVID, 2022, I would say, was kind of our rebuilding year, our reassessment year. I'm really proud of the work that we've done. And a lot of what we've turned towards is how do we help the small burgeoning farms within Boulder County? There are so many great farms in Boulder County. So many of them have great outlets like the farmers market to connect with the community.
And farm stands, of course.
And farm stands, of course, right? And there are a ton of support kind of opportunities for these mid-tier established farms. What about the smaller farms and the beginning farmers? That's where we come in.
Right. So what are you doing for the smaller farmers?
So specifically, so one of the things that helped to reinvigorate our chapter in 2022, blessing and a curse all at the same time, was the Marshall Fire. And I helped, our chapter helped Donna at Fed Boulder coordinate all of the volunteers for her feeding process, mm-hmm. for all of the work
that she incredible.
Did. It was incredible. So we would do things like go to the farms and we'd pick up produce and drop them off at her production kitchen. And then in January, we had a discussion with local, smaller local farmers. Like, mm-hmm. let's say...
Name a few.
I know my brain is like doing one of those. Well, Jolly Radish, Metacarbon, Rough
Squeak
and Ready,
and Squawk.
Squeak
right.
and Squawk.
Okay.
So we had a lot of smaller farmers come to Faro, which we love Faro. We love everything that Lisa and Patrick are doing, everything for the restaurant. 90% come within 10 miles of the restaurant, mm-hmm. so everything is constantly changing there. And so we listened to them, like, what do you need from us? So we did things like work with a grain chain on trying to, we do education activities. What else do we do in March? I'm like, I knew I should have had a list.
No, but these are all.
And the seed exchange.
Right.
You came to the seed exchange, which is something we'll do again this year, mm-hmm. which will be the fourth or fifth year.
Yeah.
And it's a free event.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. It's at the Mountain Fountain in Hygiene. Carrie Olson's the proprietor there.
This helps to engage the home farmers, the home right. gardeners.
Yes.
Of which I am one. Somehow a beautiful pepper plant survived my sabbatical. It's
nice.
Sitting in my window in the sun, and I should be getting some more long peppers out of it.
That's great.
But,
and one important thing I wanted to mention about like the seed exchange, you know, the importance of having events that focus on the idea of exchanging seed is a lot of these seeds have been bioregionally adapted to thrive. Like you said, John, your mm-hmm. pepper plant made it through a long hiatus. These are seeds that have proven themselves to thrive and be successful and be nutrient dense. And it's exchanging these in our local areas that keeps a very resilient food system that's based on specifically where we are, our altitude, the soil acidity. These are very important elements of being able to be a successful grower.
Well, and there's one prominent person working on that is the folks at MASA.
Dan, that's great. Yeah.
Dan,
that's a great point. Exactly. Yeah. I was going to jump in and say MASA the folks at MASA Foundation partnered with us on that seed exchange, and they're doing incredible work over there.
And that they're very much into growing seeds that aren't controlled by multinational corporations that you can grow and then collect and then plant again.
Absolutely.
Sounds simple, but it's very important.
It really is.
And it's fun to see people come and look at, first of all, the MASA label itself and say, and just go through, oh, I can grow amaranth at my house? And like, yes, it is actually native.
even artichokes, for that matter.
Yes. Wait, I just got an artichoke tattoo.
Hey,
oh my gosh.
Hey, all right.
And berries.
And
blackberries,
yes, exactly.
Raspberries. And those all can be grown here. Yeah.
And I did want to mention to the folks listening at home, again, this is Kitchen Table Talk with Dan Asher and myself and our guests. And if you have questions about slow food and about food in Boulder County, give us a call, and the number is
303-442-4242.
You heard it here, folks.
Another thing that we did this past year was we worked with Olin Farms. We had six events on Olin Farms. We called them Slow Saturdays, and they were the third Saturday of every month, and they were themed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would do things like we did a ball jar exchange. We did an education on how to store vegetables and fermenting and freezing and dehydrating and giving, real-life tips.
Well, and the nice thing about that was that they invited some of the smaller farmers to set up at Olin, and we know that it can be challenging to meet the criteria for the farmer's market or even to set up a farm stand.
Yes, there were a lot of changes at the farmer's market this year, so they reached out to us to be say, help us.
Right.
And that's really where we found that we could kind of fit and make our biggest impact, the gap between kind of as a connector in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we focused on this past year was finding partners for mostly events that we could connect smaller farmers to or the community to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other part of this connection, Dan, is the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to speak about this. Right. If you guys can talk a little bit about the Snail of Approval program, and I still have to get in all my paperwork for that. So
We came on the show to pressure you,
Dan. No, I appreciate that. I'm going to get It's River and Woods and Ashkara signed up and integrated into that. But can you speak a little bit to that? Because it's a wonderful way of maintaining integrity and having a very quick reference point for consumers and guests to know that what's going on behind the scenes in the back of the house operations from a culinary standpoint is coming in at a very high level of intention and support for local food systems.
Yeah, thanks for that intro for the program, Dan. So Seal of Approval is essentially Slow Foods kind of certification. It's a stamp of approval for restaurants and producers to kind of be able to show that they're in total alignment with Slow Foods values, from staffing and their employment practices all the way to how they're sourcing and creating their food. So we have, how many, do you know how many we have on our list?
Six or seven. I can list them if I have a moment.
We'll have a list. But essentially, it's a process that any restaurant or producer can go through on the Slow Food website to apply for kind of this stamp of approval, indicating to folks who are interested in supporting good, clean, fair food for all in the community to kind of look at and say, okay, this is where I can go to support local food and local food producers and purveyors within Boulder County.
And because you have to get down to the finances. It's been, it means that restaurants are choosing to buy their produce and their meat and other things from local sources.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that can be a challenge too.
It's not always the easiest way of doing things. I'd like to add to that that the Snail of Approval originally started in New York and San Francisco. So it was something that was, it seemed almost laborious and arduous to try and take on as a national program for Slow Food USA. Mm-hmm. And over the past year and maybe 18 months, they said, let's do this. So we are working as a whole national community on even improving, it's not just restaurants and producers, but they're, Sonoma has wineries, and then there's fisheries and up in the Northwest. So we're trying really hard to increase the program, but also still streamline it. And then they're also thinking of creating what they're calling, right now the working title is a snail trail.
Yeah.
And it would go across the country, so you could open up the Slow Food USA website, which you can do, slowfoodusa.org, and there is a Snail of Approval link, and it'll give you a map. And thanks, I have to give a shout out to Slow Food Denver, because we were not mature enough at the time. They helped us bring us into this program. So the Mountain Fountain and Faro and Pastaficio, Fortuna Chocolate, 24 Karat Bistro, and if you haven't been there, oh, they're so good.
Project Umami.
Project Umami, Dryland Distillers, mm-hmm. and who am I missing? Oh, that's seven.
But that really covers the wide range of producers, people who are packaging food like Tempe or alcohol producers. Mm-hmm. Or does it include markets and that kind of stuff?
Markets are actually Mountain Fountain is on our list, and so that's actually we're working as a team on the USA side to see, what makes sense for markets. I think there was one up in the Northeast in Vermont that they were just curious on whether they could bring them in. So I use Mountain Fountain as an example, where I would say 90% of the stuff that they sell there is local, but they do very heavy bike area. So there are some things like Gatorade there. That's okay.
Yeah, that's a more reasonable approach. There have been stores and restaurant. So I've been writing about food in Boulder since the early 1980s, really. And along the way, there have been actually a surprising number of natural food stores and small restaurants that have tried to do this.
Right.
And but they didn't have the wherewithal, the support. And I really think there's a whole lot more consumers now that are paying attention, and they want to sort of walk the talk or spend their money where it really will do some good.
Makes total sense. And I forgot two very important ones. GB Culinary and the Whistling Boar are also Snail of Approval.
The Whistling Boar, yeah.
And they do everything right, and their food is just
Yeah, wonderful. And important inclusions, right. Because, again, it extends to catering services as well.
Yes.
Right. Dan?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I know, Katie, you spent time with Slow Food in New York and Chicago before Boulder. How is the landscape looking there as far as integrating slow food into the restaurant scene, and what sort of things that you see in those two markets? Obviously giant, completely different, markets than Boulder County, but I'm just curious, to see if you have any insights or thoughts on what you've seen become possible through the Slow Food Network.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So, Dan, you're right. I was with Slow Food New York City when I first kind of encountered the slow food movement, and then spent about 6 years in Chicago as a volunteer with Slow Food Chicago. Both chapters are doing incredible work, but to the point of the chapter kind of structure, allowing for each chapter to speak to the needs of the community and kind of adapt to the facts on the ground within the community, both New York City and Chicago chapters, when I was there, were really more focused on urban agriculture and kind of building up kind of urban garden programs and connecting folks within the city to the soil. And they had that opportunity because of kind of the unique needs and gaps within the cities. So I would say that's kind of where I saw the most work being done within those two chapters, especially compared to kind of Boulder County here.
Sure. That's great. And I think an important element of that is, acknowledging part of the slow food principles is fair and equitable access to good, clean food, which I think, sometimes gets lost in the shuffle of, delicious little ingredients and specialty vegetables and, heirloom lineages of produce that becomes, people get priced out from being able to obtain them or to try them or to be nourished by them. And I think a huge part of what I love about slow food is the demand for equal access.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which really connects you to some other organizations like Boulder Food Rescue.
The R Center.
Right. Community Food Share, obviously.
And some farms, for example, Community Table Farm, Andrew Nowak, their CSA model is he allows people to give extra money for other to give CSAs to under-resourced communities. So you buy a CSA, if you can add an extra $50, he can give a CSA away. And I think that model is starting to improve. Like, there's more farms doing that.
So there's more people being able to access more parts of the Boulder County populace are able to access this locally grown food. But Dan, from a practical standpoint, you're a restaurateur, you have multiple restaurants, and I know how hard you try to connect up with local farms, but maybe you can, it's not that easy. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about the challenges of how you find sources of local food that you can practically buy and practically incorporate into your restaurant and sell.
Yes. I think the biggest challenge is, I think, the financial modeling in many ways. When you look at, a standard restaurant that's sourcing, commodity, everything, they have a very specific bottom line, and they approach the equation from a standpoint of, this is where we need to be at, and this is the kind of food we need to purchase to be under that reference point. Whereas my approach is, if we do things right, and we support a network of people that are also focused on doing things properly with the right level of intention and desire for supporting one another as a small community and for having healthy, vibrant soil. And you can charge accordingly and educate guests so that they understand why this is a little bit of a different experience. Then everyone wins. If you look at, a $2 cheeseburger that you'd get at a drive-through, based on food cost, models and where those places need to be at, that burger had to cost them about 70 cents. So when you think about, you know, our, as we navigate our own life at home, what kind of burger are you making for 70 cents? You know, whereas you look at, you know, the burger that we have at River and Woods, for example, are dollars, you know, so you look at that and, it can't possibly make sense on the scale that other, you know, huge multinational corporations are approaching their food purchasing decisions. You know, our bun is twice what that is, and they're making an entire burger. So there's no way to do it that way. You just have to reformat your philosophy and what you do and why you do it. And that's what I love about Boulder, is because we have a very educated clientele that understands the cost of food, I think, on a level more than most markets that I've been in. And people have a much better understanding of why food needs to cost what it does. Consumers, unfortunately, these days are completely detached from what the true cost of food is, and getting everyone paid fairly along every step of the way, from folks in the field that are harvesting, the farmers that are literally putting in all, you know, all of the inputs for a yield that is precariously balanced on the forces of nature and unexpected droughts and hail and storms, fluctuations in everything from temperature to pressure to wind, and it all affects your final yield, you know, so you don't even know what's going to happen when you put seeds in the ground at the beginning of the season, and then what you're going to end up with your family at the end, to be able to feed, so the farmers can actually feed their families properly, and everyone on their team and staff is feeding their families properly. So it's a huge equation, and it really comes down to strong connections, open, fearless communication, saying, hey, this is what we can afford to do. Can you, you know, can we get this crop for the season, or can we get, you know, 60 pounds of this per week at this price point? If you can lock that in, then we'll take everything that you can grow. And that's how it works. It's really about honest communication, being transparent with what you need to do and how you need to do it, and making sure everyone along the way feels good about those decisions.
And I've talked to a number of restaurateurs who, you know, faced with the same situation. They just say flexibility is the key, because some of them are on such terms with small farmers that they say, look, you know, if you've got a crop of rainbow radishes coming up, or watermelon radishes, you know, I'll take them. And when they come in, you have to deal with, you know, all those radishes. And
right.
I wanted to mention, we're coming up at the top of the hour, and you are listening to KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder and KGNU 1390 Denver. Of course, you can always hear us online at kgnu.org. And this is Kitchen Table Talk with Dan Asher. I'm John Lendorf. We have guests from Slow Food, and we welcome your calls down here at KGNU if you have questions. And I have a question, Dan.
Yeah.
So I went to, you know, I got to get my walking in, and I find that certain stores have long aisles.
Okay.
I was in one of them last night, and I walked down to the egg section, and there literally are no eggs. This is
yes,
the biggest grocery store in the area. And I've heard this from other people. And then when there are eggs, they're $7 a dozen. And it's so what have you heard? Why are there no eggs? Why are they so expensive?
There's, you know, a huge issue was the, you know, the bird flu,
right.
Which this past season, you know, was insane and wrecked a tremendous amount of havoc. So that impacted eggs on in so many different ways in so many different regions. And it really goes to show, you know, supply chain challenges and how we're all connected. And it's very hard because, you know, eggs are a crucial protein. And they are so diverse in a restaurant kitchen, as people know, also at home. Sweet dishes, savory dishes, baking, pastries, you know, they're so necessary also as a basic, you know, food to get all of your protein and vitamins and minerals. They're a very usually affordable way to eat and be properly nourished. Eggs are really unbelievable with what they provide. But these challenges with cost are crazy, and it's affecting everything. And it's extremely challenging. I couldn't agree with you more. I literally did a double take. I was at the store and I was looking at egg pricing, and there was, I forgot what kind of eggs they were, but they were $13 a dozen.
Wow.
I did a double take. I was like, someone messed up this is a tag for something else. And I looked and it was literally for a dozen eggs, not even one of those 18 packs, a dozen eggs. It's unbelievable. And in commercial food service, our eggs have shot up, 30-something%. And it's extremely challenging, and also makes us stay connected. I also want to bring up, a phenomenal, amazing local egg company, Fair Farms, that Walt Pounds had started, and he's amazing and done tremendous work with local food systems in many different capacities, had an unbelievable egg operation that did not make it through a COVID, unfortunately, due to all sorts of challenges and costs and logistics.
And also, normally in this circumstance, what I tell people to do is to look for those signs by the side of the road that says eggs for sale. There aren't any anymore.
Yeah.
A lot of those people got either wiped out by COVID or by avian flu.
Right.
So it's actually very hard now to find. Well, it's also winter. So I guess, January is traditionally a dry January. You're not supposed to have any martinis until February.
Correct.
Maybe,
right.
I guess we'll have to declare this eggless January, and we'll go for alternatives.
Right. Exactly. So, aquafaba, I guess.
We could have what aquafaba? Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know aquafaba. I usually just add it to stews.
I have a funny connection about aquafaba related.
You better explain what it is.
First of all, it comes in the explanation.
Oh, okay.
So Resilient Roots is a Boulder Farmers Market vendor, and she makes this vegan cashew dip, and it's delicious. And then I work with Dryland, they're one of our stamp of approval, and they use aquafaba in some of their cocktails, which is a vegan way to do what's it called?
A flip.
Thank you. It's so you can make a whiskey sour, vegan whiskey sour kind of thing. And so I had Glenn Carmichael from Dryland and Lauren from Resilient Roots. We were talking, and he has too many chickpeas and she has too much aquafaba. And I said, you two need to get together. So he drops off the chickpeas to her, and she drops off the aquafaba to him. And that's the kind of connection that I love being able to spearhead with slow food. It's so simple and dumb from like a high level perspective,
right.
But it's like it makes them
great.
Both very happy.
Mm-hmm. So, folks,
it's poetry in motion. That's perfect.
Totally.
And in case you didn't catch it, so aquafaba. If you open a can of chickpeas, that's the liquid.
Chickpea powder, yeah.
Yeah. Although
it's amazing.
Almost any other bean or pulse, will also produce something like aquafaba. So far I haven't tried to make scrambled eggs with it. I tend to add it to stews, soups, sauces, and things. I see people pour it down the drain, and it's so wrong. It's like a valuable liquid commodity. So.
And it's got protein in it, and it's got good nutrients in it, so it's win-win.
Right. So, listeners, your job today is, in the course of your day, I want you to casually slip the word aquafaba into your conversation in order to just liven things here on a chilly day.
Catch people off guard. Right. Yeah, exactly.
So, slow food.
That's fantastic.
What's... what can we look forward to in 2023? What's coming up, events, projects?
Yeah, so actually we have an event in this month on the 22nd for our members. It's a New Year's celebration is really what we're calling it. We kind of forewent a holiday party. We're celebrating all the holidays in the new year in January for our members, our Slow Food members, at Cheese Importers up in Longmont. Mm-hmm. It's like a wine and cheese event. And anybody who's a member of Slow Food, you can go to slowfoodusa.org to become a member.
Or slowfoodboulder.org.
Right.
is invited to come and connect with farmers and our local Slow Food Boulder County partners as well, and just celebrate the new year.
So I guess what you're saying is that right now, right this moment, is the best time to become a member of Slow Food because you get to go to the party.
While supplies last.
And then we will be doing the seed exchange as well. Mm-hmm. And then we're on the docket for the to do a dinner at Lyons Farmette.
Yep.
And we're going to make it a snail approval style dinner. But
where are the restaurants that do... that have the snail approval will contribute.
And I'm hoping either GB Culinary or Whistling Boar will be the chef for that event.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we're still trying to determine what we're going to be doing because we really want to keep things low cost, accessible. The only thing that may not be is the Lyons Farmette, but everybody's going to make money because we're all volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Not unlike KG and you.
Yes, exactly.
You know, that it's... you have this world of really experts, food experts that are running restaurants and companies and stuff, and to have them all involved. About the one thing I would wish upon you or wish that someone could, I'm sure it's what you're doing anyway, but I think that there's a huge number of people who have still never heard of Slow Food, mm-hmm. who don't know what the snail of approval is and only have a vague idea where they can access locally grown, locally produced food. So I'm interested in this, obviously, from a publishing and editorial standpoint, that getting the information out to people, making it accessible.
Yes, and so we do have a website that Jody mentioned, slowfoodboulder.org, where we're continually working to kind of keep our snail of approval list up to date and kind of keep the community informed about things that we're doing.
But are you on TikTok?
Yes, I have. We're getting there. I have a Slow Food Boulder TikTok. Have we done anything? I'm too old for that stuff.
I am the reluctant social media board member.
So
on
proud of her. Right.
But we do have, an Instagram account where our handle is Slow Food Boco, B-O-C-O. And we're on Facebook at Slow Food Boulder as well.
I'm very interested in bringing the youngins in, you know, in the same way that KGNU has been revived and repowered in the past 2 years by the influx of youngsters, which is basically anyone younger than 60. But you know what I mean.
That
through them you find out. Well, the only way you're going to reach these people who actually really care about local food is by these other means.
Good point. I'm so glad that you brought that up because
yeah,
when I started with Slow Food, it was an older team in U.S. that was running it. And after COVID, it became a lot more, there was focus on BIPOC and inclusivity and we're trying to resurrect the Slow Food Youth Coalition at CU. It's out there on Instagram, but no one's running it.
There's a Slow Food Youth Coalition?
There's a Slow Food Youth Coalition, absolutely. But we're trying to get it moving here in Boulder County because there is a lot of inequity when it comes to food access for college students.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to improve that.
That's great.
The only way we can do that is by listening, by having them say, hey, we're here. We want to join your team. And here's what we can do to fill in the gaps.
So this is us reaching out to the college students, the people that I don't really care what you're majoring in, but if you have this humongous interest in helping local food survive and wondering why it doesn't, this is your chance to come in and help shift the paradigm.
Right. If your major is being a good global citizen, I think everyone should look to the Slow Food Youth Coalition.
For sure.
Well, they should. We need people to join.
Yes, yeah. We definitely do.
Yes.
We want to remind everyone listening that we're more than happy to answer your questions about local food, where to get it, and issues that you might have. Feel free to give us a call.
And I wanted to also mention and do a shout out to these younger farmers mm-hmm. as well. For example, the Treehouse Collective. Okay. It is a group of farmers that they were interns with some of the larger farmers, some of the larger farmers in Boulder County, but they started their own little collective. And so it's Matt from Jolly Radish. We have Laura and Artists. from Rough and Ready. And then we have Brett and Vanita from Switch Gears. Yes, I get it. But they're leasing the same land. They're working together. They have their own business models. And that is a great collaborative, and I love that model going forward.
And that's wonderful.
That's awesome.
Energy right there.
Oh, my gosh, they're fantastic.
And besides that, they're so cute.
They are. I didn't want to say it, but geez.
We are seeing that, you know, a lot of, again, kind of in speaking with these smaller beginning farmers, what we formerly called young farmers, we don't want to call them that anymore, beginning farmers who are mostly young, right?
Right.
They are very much geared towards kind of collaboration and community and coalition building with each other and creating kind of equitable market share for everybody involved. We do get the sense that there's a little less sense of competition.
Yeah,
with these folks.
I believe that we have a caller.
Yes, Randy from Ward, you are on the air.
For the older generation, would like for you to say telephone numbers slowly.
Okay.
Okay. From what I gathered, that was very, very low. Just to get give your contact information again slowly so that people can write it down.
Great. So if you are interested in slow food, we do not have a central number because we are an all-volunteer board. But as I understand not being connected to the internet, but if you are interested, you can call myself. Sorry, I'm going to do it out loud. 303-775-1472. And I will only take a call from Ward.
And all you have to do is Google slow food Boulder County, and you can find all those wonderful connections.
Yeah.
Yep. We're at slowfoodboulder.org.
Yes.
And I wanted to mention an event that's coming up January 14th. It's called Café de la Culture, the venue for visionaries. And this is a fascinating, cool thing. It's actually at a secret Boulder venue, probably an art gallery, with several chefs. But so you're going to get a three-course meal. One of the chefs, Aaron Landy, is also going to play music and display his art. There's other painters and sculptors. There's live music, dance, and spoken word, and then a panel discussion. And the best thing about this is the website, which is howcanhappinessbemeasured.eventbrite.com. How can happiness be measured? And that's certainly a question that I have thought of myself. So that's January 14th in Boulder. How can happiness be measured? And, that's very Boulder.
You know what? That's worth dedicating a whole radio session to right there.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm thinking of a couple of different kinds of stories that could come out of that very soon. One of the things I love about Boulder County is that there's more and more of these great events that are, it's not just a three-course meal, you know, with a wine addition. It's that there's an elevating quality to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, speaking from the slow food perspective, the mission is good, clean, fair food for all. A lot of that is focused around kind of connection with food, joy that comes from sharing food together, and education around food, which is what's so cool about a lot of these events, slow food connected or otherwise, in Boulder.
Well, you know what it's coming out of, I think. Some of this is just so many of us felt so deprived of the joy of eating mm-hmm. with other people. I've personally missed that terribly. It used to happen casually, and now it's a little more challenging, and I'm glad to see people getting back together, because that kind of is the whole point. If you're sitting there by yourself eating your locally grown peas, mm-hmm. It's a better thing if you can bring your neighborhood together, your street, your town, and to maybe do some good in the process.
And one thing that I started doing before times, we call it, I was running the Boulder County Fair Farm to Table Dinner.
Oh, yeah.
I did that a couple of years, and I did that because I felt very strongly that food is the common denominator, just like music is the common denominator. And if you can sit and break bread with people from different political spectrums, then you've got that commonality between you, mm-hmm. and you can enjoy and laugh together. And I hope it comes back.
Yeah, food is the bridge.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I can sit down with anybody of any persuasion or religion, and you find bridges through food.
Absolutely.
And we've all had, during the COVID times, we've all had this opportunity to kind of practice and perfect different areas of the culinary arts we're interested in, whether that is, baking sourdough bread,
right.
the go-to, or perfecting the local pea recipe, right? So we've had all this opportunity to kind of perfect these recipes and kind of build out our own arsenal, and now it's time to get out there and share them with the people we're proudest to serve them to, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to chat with you about is, so we talked about engaging the younger growers mm-hmm. and food producers. And thank goodness for them, because you need to be young to do a lot of those things and have the energy and the drive.
Mm-hmm.
But there also is, I'm hearing anyway, a growing number of immigrant and ethnic gardeners, a lot of them working through community gardens and things like that, growing the vegetables and herbs and things from their own country and introducing that to people, or in some cases growing for specific restaurants. And I really love the idea of bringing all of them back to the table.
We would love to tap into some of that education, because I feel like that is at the core of slow food. That regional knowledge, the regional food, and if people are bringing it to us, beans are a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the Plant a Seed for Change campaign for slow food, where there were six different bean seeds, and they were beans from all over. And it's also another common denominator food. It's inexpensive. It's high protein. It's very versatile, but it's also intimidating for people, because beans are something that some people, I don't like beans. I just don't like them. Well, why don't you try it this way, or try it this way? We would love to learn more from that community. And so if there's anyone out there listening that would love to teach us about what you brought from your local region that you're growing, that you have success with, that you want to get into a restaurant, or you want to even have an educational session, we are completely open to something like that.
Yeah, and there's obviously a tremendous number of refugee groups.
Oh, yes,
too.
Of course.
I've talked to some of the folks who were helping with Afghani immigrants who were settling here. They were actually trying to bake authentic Afghani bread to make them feel more at home, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing.
How did that work in our altitude?
It was okay, because it's a flatbread. But
just let him ride into that.
Thank you. To go back to Fed mm-hmm. and Deborah, mm-hmm. the food truck. I was so pleased. I mean, recently they rose to the occasion again.
Mm-hmm.
A whole bunch of refugees from Central and South America were dropped off suddenly in Denver. And they put together a program again. They called up the farmers. They called up the suppliers. And they said, we've got all these people in Denver, and we need to feed them. how are we going to do that? And they cooked thousands of meals.
They did.
And I feel like there's a vibrancy in those community, in those refugee and immigrant communities that we could use.
And in Denver, actually, I'm going to use Slow Food Dallas as an example real quick. Mm-hmm. There's a woman that I met, Slow Food, in 2017. She runs an organization called Break Bread, Break Borders. And her whole goal was to take those refugees and give them jobs. And so they're caterers, and they share their knowledge. And there's an organization in Denver, and it's escaping my brain.
Yes.
They were at Edible, the Edible Convention, and they're making rice and all kinds of yummy stuff from their native culture, and they're employing their people, and it's wonderful.
What's the name of that place?
I know, it's killing me.
Our Kitchen? It's a collective.
Right? It is a collective.
Oh, they're so good.
And they make dish towels and all kinds of lovely things.
Comida.
And,
isn't it Comida?
No, Comida's a taco place. Anyway, I can get it to you because I have the rice at my house.
but in any case, if there's anyone listening, and this idea of engaging these communities with Slow Food and Boulder County, you know, please get in touch with Slow Food and let them know. I mean, I'd love to hear about, you know, events involving that. And I think we have a caller.
Caller, you are on the air.
Hello.
I'm sorry. Our phones seem to be really exceptionally low volume today, so I'm going to have to bail out of that phone call. Sorry.
Okay. Technology rearing its...
I know he said he was from Fort Collins.
Yeah, sorry to lose you, caller. But I do want to jump in quickly just to kind of add on to the invitation. Kind of hand in hand with our efforts to connect with communities, refugee communities, immigrant communities who are bringing their food cultures here, we're also really prioritizing connecting with indigenous producers in the Boulder County area and kind of in Colorado at large. It's a big kind of gap right now in the community we serve and in our representation within the chapter, and we really want to try to write that in as sustainable and respectful a way as possible. So we're doing work to connect with organizations like Harvest of All First Nations to really start connecting with and serving indigenous food producing communities here. Mm-hmm. But anybody who's interested in connecting with us, please do reach out in info@slowfoodboulder.org.
There also is a, of course, I'm losing the name again.
Spirit of the Sun,
yeah.
There is a Native American restaurant in Denver.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They have...
Tokabe, also. Tokabe is another one.
Tokabe,
yeah.
But Tokabe has launched a new food service. Essentially, they are... you can go to their website and order wild rice and blue corn and berries and other ingredients that are produced by indigenous communities all over the country. Mm-hmm. And it answers that question, well, I would like to serve that food, but where do I get the real ingredients? And
right.
So,
right, as far as being authentic. And I did find that. I tracked down Michelle, the founder of Our Bazaar Denver, R-B-A-Z-A-A-R Denver.com, pop-up market celebrating refugee and immigrant artisans, and they were at the Edible event, and the phenomenal collective with what they're doing.
Yes,
fantastic.
We've got only a few more minutes here, and I wanted to mention your event coming up.
Oh yeah, so on January 22nd, Slow Food Boulder County is hosting a members-only invitation to our New Year's celebration, hosted at Cheese Importers in Niwot. Cheese Importers in Longmont. It'll be an opportunity. It's a wine and cheese kind of event from 1 to 3, Sunday, January 22nd, an opportunity for members to connect with farmers and Slow Food Boulder County partners. If you're not a Slow Food member currently, you can go to slowfoodboulder.org and become a member and just select Boulder County as your local chapter.
You pretty much had me at cheese.
And to RSVP, you can go to our events tab on slowfoodboulder.org, mm-hmm. and I've got the sign up. We've got the sign up there.
Right.
So it's going to be a really very chill, very fun event.
So, Dan, what do you have coming up? I know you're on vacation right now, but as you look ahead into the year, what's exciting for you?
To really dialing in our, you know, seasonal menus, really connecting with some fantastic producers, a lot of folks that we've highlighted on the show so far, John, and really, you know, really getting into this focus on regenerative agriculture and really like upping the bar. So it's not just sustainable local food, but it's also growing with a very high level of meticulous thought towards soil health and wellness. And I think that's, you know, a step beyond, you know, what people normally look at as being necessary and essential. And I think that, you know, as a restaurant culinary experience, being able to operate in that space and to be able to offer that to our guests, I think would just be a great level to kind of up what we do and up how we connect to our community.
I got a question.
And, you know, to be honest, the growing scene is incredible here. My hardest challenge is how to support all the local farms and ranches that are growing amazing food.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever ask farmers to grow specific crops for you?
That, you know, we've done that in the past, and it gets somewhat challenging because we don't know how our guests will react to a certain dish. So we may think we're going to want, you know, 40 pounds of a specific type of turnip, you know, for the next 12 weeks. And then 3 weeks in, we find out, wait, that dish isn't doing as well as we wanted it to do. That's always a very challenging experience. And I've had a lot of conversations with local farmers about this when they've set up these kinds of arrangements. And then all of a sudden, the chef will just say, this isn't working, we can't do it anymore. And then all of a sudden, the farmers set up this whole model, and then they don't have an outlet for that particular ingredient. So, you know, that gets challenging, but it also creates an opportunity to be creative and to create dishes that can be used for, you know, to cross-utilize different things across your menu, which is also great. But, you know, for example, like Peter at Oxford Gardens, you know, at Ashkara, we exclusively used his organic Persian cucumbers in our house pickles. So I was basically taking everything that he, you know, could grow 40 some odd pounds a week throughout the whole season. So when you have something like that, when you have it as an ingredient, not necessarily the focal point of a dish, but something that's in some state of preservation, you know, like a kimchi or a ferment or a pickle, that gives you a lot more freedom as a restaurant to utilize that ingredient across multiple dishes.
So we're almost done with our kitchen table talk show. The one thing about what you just said, Dan, was so sometimes you have a hard time finding a way to use crops, right? Mm-hmm. Seems like there should be a restaurant collective that where those crops could be shopped to. It's just a thought.
Our team is actually working on something like that.
And
that's great.
We're going to be back a month from now with the Kitchen Table Talk to let you know what's going on food-wise. And you can also tune in every Thursday and join me for Radio Nibbles.
I just want to butt in and say that I took the call in the hallway. Just the caller who was trying to say something. And what he had to say was that Colorado State, in collaboration with Boulder County Extension Service, has begun a new project called the Urban Architectural Horticulture Project. And it basically focuses on green building, on rooftop gardens. And that the person to look for there is named Darren, D-E-R-Y-N, who is the director of the new program. And the best place to find information about it is Boulder County Extension Service. So I'm just relaying the message.
Wow.
That's
Urban Architectural Horticulture Project. That's awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. That's exactly.
Thank you for taking that call.
Thank you. Yes.
That's great. And yeah, Jody and Katie, thank you so much for jumping in and diving in with us and discussing the beauty and poetry of slow food when it's done with the right level of connection and intention.
It was our pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much. Have a happy new year.
Yes. Happy new year.
Happy 2023.
Mm-hmm. Happy new year to everyone. And should you have any comments or questions, You can send them to me at nibbles@kgnu.org.